Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatamrita, Chapter 5, Text 103 to 105. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yesham Darsana Sambhasya Darshanu Gananasanai Bhojano Dva Shayanaish Satanyai Dahikai Didai Dischedai Prema Sambandhai Atma Sambandhato Dikai Sadasvagapsava Gecham Chitva Bhaktin Divadayam Krishna Vismitta Vaikuntho Valashai Sai Anikshanam Navam Navam Anirvacham Vitanoti Sukham Mahat. Krishna has now forgotten Vaikuntha, for he is bound by intense, unbreakable loving exchanges with these yadus. He sees the yadus, touches them, talks with them, sits with them. He eats and sleeps with them, follows them when they walk. He eats and sleeps with them, follows them when they walk, takes part in their marriage ceremonies, and shares in their other activities of embodied life. These relations are more tangible than the yogi's union with him in meditation. Thus, by his pastimes, Krishna spreads among the yadus infinite pleasure, ever fresh and indescribable, destroying any desire they might have for heaven or liberation, and increasing more and more their devotion to him. Commentary. Sri Krishna descended to earth not only for his own enjoyment, but also to give pleasure to his devotees. Some of the yadus might once have harbored desires to attain the higher celestial worlds and associate with Krishna there. Some of the yadus, in fact, had descended from the planets of the demigods, so in their human pastimes, they might naturally have felt an urge to return to heaven. But after they lived for some time with Krishna in Dwarka, such unsuitable desires in their hearts dissolved. The yadus lost every trace of interest in liberation from the cycle of samsara, because they wanted never to be deprived of the opportunity to take birth again and again in the company of Krishna. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Daksurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Vairagya Yud Bhakti Risham Piyatnai Apayam Mamana Dipsamandam Kripambhuya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumatriyami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Vaibhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Namo, Hare Namo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. We had a program here yesterday, which is very nice. Unfortunately, not everyone comes to hear. Guess when you have successful programs, people become it attracts a wider variety of people, including people who see spiritual life as just social life. But I think at least 3/4 of the people, they understand that the real benefit is in hearing and chanting. So wonderful story, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Can't really think of a more wonderful story than this of Narada, the transcendental spaceman. What a devotee Narada is, he's the teacher of Dhruva, Prahlad, of so many great souls, of Vyasadeva himself, the compiler of the Vedas. And as a great devotee, he seeks great devotees. That's the primary symptom of someone in spiritual life, is that they like to hear. So anyway, when you do these programs, you know, and you see some people so intent, they sit there the whole time and they hear, you understand, oh yes, this is their spiritual life. They like to hear. That's the symptom of advancement. Srila Prabhupada himself was marked by his own guru, because he liked to hear. And liking to hear means you seek the association. You seek the association of people who, of people who can present with realization. Realization means that people not only understand something is true, but because they practice what they hear, they actually begin to realize or see what is true. And with that depth of vision and understanding and the enlivenment that comes from actually seeing and understanding truth, they have the impetus and ability and understanding to actually communicate that truth in a way that people will become enlivened. So you seek out, this is spiritual life, the process of bhakti, it moves on sadhu sangha. It paths of bhakti, the tracks of bhakti. If bhakti is like a train that's moving, the path of bhakti, the tracks of bhakti are association with the devotees who have realization and are attached to Krishna, attached to the absolute reality, and they speak about it. And this is how we advance in spiritual life. In the Yoga Sutras, one of the niyams, the moral observances, mandatory for one who wants to be a yogi, a transcendentalist, one of the aspects is swadhyaya, self-study. And self-study means about the shastra, because the shastra is about self-realization. And in the Yoga Sutras, it also lists the benefit of perfectly following various niyams and moral observances. And one of them is that if you follow the shastra, if you study the shastra in the appropriate way, Nashta Preshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Seva. If you do it every day and you hear in the appropriate way, it reconnects you with your relationship with your desirable Lord, the form of God whom you have a relationship with. So therefore, it reveals yourself or your eternal relationship with the Supreme One. That's the benefit of hearing Shastra. That's why it's so important to hear the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Because if you hear it regularly, your true nature, your relationship with the absolute reality will awaken within your heart. And this is why Narada is so anxious for association. He's seeking it. When he comes to see the great devotees, he's coming because he wants to see the embodiment of pure devotion, and he wants to hear the realizations of those who live in that way. Because when you practice something, then what you speak has something added and has conviction. And that conviction, that those words that are spoken with conviction, it can change your heart. The words spoken with conviction can change your heart. So Narada is seeking the devotees who love Krishna the most. And it's a wonderful journey, and now he's been directed higher and higher and higher, and he's in Dwarka, which is where the devotees have a very intimate relationship with God, beginning to transcend reverence. Reverence is a wonderful relationship with God, but reverence means distance. So the devotion is not as powerful. We've discussed this point many, many times because it's one of the main points in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Gaudiya Vaishnavism itself, one of the main points is that the most powerful love is that which is only love. And if you're dealing with a superior, there's a sense of obligation, duty, fear, and distance that is something else than love. So the Kevala Bhakti, the spontaneous love, can only manifest when you're not aware that Krishna is divinity. And therefore, your approach to Krishna is not mixed with an intellectual or mental conception that these are the rules and I should do this and I may commit offense. So the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a progression of devotees. When Narada is going from place to place, he's finding more and more intimate devotees, and now he's come to Dwarka. We know that Prabhupada mentions in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya that the spiritual realm in relationship to Krishna is perfect because the love is perfect. It's pure. It's Kevala Bhakti. But even in relationship to Krishna, there's different divisions of love. There's different divisions of love. And there's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect, which is kind of an ironic conception because perfect means that there's nothing better. But even in this world, we can see a perfect, more perfect, and most perfect in terms of people's relationship with someone. Like, for example, there can be a mother. She has love for her child, so her love is perfect. But then the child grows up. Maybe it's a young boy, and he's in his 20s, and now he has a lover. And that conjugal love has something intimate that even the motherly love doesn't have. So you can't say the mother's love is not perfect, but you can say that that conjugal love is more perfect, has something else. So this type of analogy, it's perfect because the mother's love, that's her relationship. She doesn't want any other relationship. So her love is perfect and pure. She doesn't seek that conjugal relationship. It's actually abhorrent, if you would even think that way. But somehow or other, there's another realm of greater intimacy. So we're seeing that, and this is Dwarka. It's more perfect. We're not yet to Vrindavan, which is most perfect. So Narada is appreciating it so much, the radiance of, and it's unprecedented, that the closeness that people have with God has not been seen before. And in fact, and this point has been highlighted many, many times, this is the contribution of Madhavendra Puri in our line and Rupa Goswami in our line, that they revealed this manifestation of divinity. What Krishna means is all attractive. Why is he all attractive? Because God is perfect, but he's fully manifest in intimate love, and that's Krishna. It's the same absolute reality. But it's that absolute reality when the absolute reality is reciprocating with the most deep and intimate love. One second here. So, and I think Gail, she asked the question. She asked the question in the last class, what makes their love greater than the Pandavas, which was the devotees who pointed to the Yadus, the residents of Dwarka. I think maybe today we'll touch upon this. But let me get to these verses, and you know, for me that's a short introduction, but it's so beautiful here now. They're talking about that love and the pleasure that it gives. And the Yadus in Dwarka who touch Krishna, who talk with him, sit, eat, he takes part in their marriage. There's so many intimate activities. They get so much pleasure. This pleasure is love. So their hearts are so filled with love that it destroys any desire they have for anything else but that full manifestation of love. If you look at it from many, many perspectives, what is perfection? What is happiness? What is advancement in spiritual life? It all has to do with the heart, actually. It has to do with the heart. It's the heart. It's the personality. I made a point yesterday in class. I'd like to repeat today. I was reading some commentaries on the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And when we see Krishna, he's riding the chariot. So the commentator wants to make the point that because Krishna is taking a subordinate role, it should not compromise your perception of his greatness. And made a very, very beautiful, put two or three beautiful points on the same concept, that greatness is not position, greatness is character. And then went on to say that someone who's not great sometimes takes a position to become great, but they're not actually great, because great is character. Great is character. Great has to do with your personality. It has to do with your selflessness. It has to do with your ability to submit yourself to principles higher than your own interests. Sometimes when I want to show to people why bhakti is the topmost yoga, or why a bhakta, someone with devotion, is the highest transcendentalist, a very common thing, I ask people just to close their eyes and meditate on whom they think is a person that they admire very much. Then I ask them to meditate on the qualities that that person has. And inevitably, the qualities that a person admires is something to do with love. Humility connected with love, compassion connected with love, fixedness in service to the teacher manifest in love. It has to, because a person could be very, very austere. He can perform many, many austerities and not be an elevated personality. Hiranyakashipu performed the greatest tapasya, the greatest austerity. But his desire was to conquer the world and gain power. Sense control in itself, austerity in itself, does not make for elevate. Position does not make for greatness. Greatness has to do with personality. With a personality that is moves to satisfy principles and desires beyond their own. So this is Krishna. Krishna's Akhila Rasa Mrita Murti. He's the embodiment. His greatness, it's mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What is Krishna's greatness? This is the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. And how does it mention Krishna's greatness initially? It mentions it in terms of being the embodiment of love, of exchange of love, and revelation of oneself in devotion and love. And when one feels this, and one experiences this, the pleasure is so great that one doesn't desire anything else. Even in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when it describes the six characteristics of pure devotional service, at the level of devotional service, practice on the level of bhava, or devotional ecstasy, one of the qualities is called moksha lagudakrit. That moksha lagudakrit means it makes the happiness of liberation lagudakrit. It makes it lagu. Lagu means very, very small. And Rupa Goswami even gives an example that if you have the pleasure of liberation, and you moksha, and you multiply it millions of times, it won't equal a fraction of the happiness one feels in pure devotional service. Because what is devotional service? It's God's highest happiness. And what's God's highest happiness? God's highest happiness is love. But to experience that happiness, God has to take that potency that shakti and put it outside of himself. He has Sarupananda, his own happiness. You can sit there yourself and feel very peaceful. You can be lying on a hammock in a beautiful spring day, in a pastoral scene, and feel very, very self-satisfied. But that type of happiness is not the highest. The happiness that is the highest is an ananda that comes outside yourself, the pleasure someone else gets from serving you. So God's shakti is internal potency to fully give himself pleasure, has to put outside of himself in the hearts of the souls that love him. And in the Gaudiya Vaishnava theology, the ultimate reality, this is what it is. That our function or purpose is to be receptacles for God's potency of love. Of course, that potency of love is within us. But because we have that potency within us to love God, then God gives us the energy that can please him, which flows through our hearts. And when that flows through one's heart, then everything else becomes insignificant, because this is what pleasure is. Pleasure is love. It's called Ladini Shakti. What is Krishna Prema? What is love of that absolute reality when it flows through the heart? It's Shakti. It's energy. And what kind of energy? It's Ladini energy. It's pleasure energy. So you have these yadus experiencing this flow of intimate love with God. It's not checked. It's just the love itself that's flowing. It's not checked by, I have to do this. I must do this. There's no sense of that in it. It's just the receptacle of love, the ashraya. God's the ashraya. He's the object. The devotee is the ashraya. He's the shelter. The shelter of what? The shelter of love. And what is our purpose of life, our goal in life, is to get that. Is to get that. And to get it begins with the desire for it. And the desire for it comes from hearing the Shastra. That should be our objective. That should be our objective. The Yadu's meditation on Kriya and Dharana and Samadhi of the yogis. So when your focus of meditation is done through love, it's the strongest focus. When the focus is simply on an object as a meditational prop, which you have no relationship with, it all depends on your powers. So you don't want to do it. You say, I should do it. This will be beneficial for me. But it's much more difficult. Even the samadhi of the yogis, when they achieve a very high level of meditation, it's not as powerful as Yogi Namapi Sarvesham Madhutena Karatmanam Shadhavam Bhajate Yomam Sameyukta. Of all yogis, he who worships me with love and devotion, he's the highest of all. Whereas impersonal meditators fall prey to various distractions, even in their so-called perfection of samadhi. Krishna's devotees in Dwarka, in their Krishna samadhi, cannot be shaken in any way, at any time, by anyone or anything. And so many stories, just like in Pushkar, famous place in India, this great sage, Vishwamitra Muni, is meditating for 60,000 years. But it's not bhakti yogena manasi. It's not a devotional meditation. It's just a plain yogic meditation. And then, because when you perform austerities, you get great power. That's how the world works. Sacrifice is always encouraged. Austerity is always a sacrifice, because that's moving one towards God. It's moving one away. Austerity is moving one away from the absorption in the body, to which basically means an identity separate from one's spiritual identity. So, So that meditation, very, very powerful when you're, in fact, even if you want to stop, you can't. When meditation is from the heart, then even when you turn the will off, the meditation continues. Even if it's a negative emotion, for example, story would be, let's say someone put you in a room and said, here, you can meditate here in the room. The only thing is somehow I kept a pet poisonous cobra and it's someplace in the room. We can't house, we can't find it. And then, let's say you were chanting, you want that, you couldn't help but think of it. And someone said, okay, now don't think of the cobra. You can't help, because there's fear or there's love. So the bhakti meditation is spontaneous, because generally to perform meditation you have to undergo so much purification. So much purification. Of course, we also, because we're not at the platform of spontaneity, but when that love comes, you can't stop it. I have a friend who's a bhakti meditator, deep meditator on the pastimes of Krishna. It's an energy that flows in his heart. It's purva samskar, it's his past life. And on the physical plane, he goes through hell. He's got different nerve problems. He's in so much pain. But he tells me in confidence, the meditation still comes. It's not dependent on that. Nothing can disturb. So Vishwamitra Muni, he's meditating. But when he can get power from that meditation, then the demigods become a little bit fearful. He may usurp some of their power, and they send the society girl Menaka and her angle bells, and it just awoken some of the seeds of desire. Even in a yogi, until you get rid of the body, the seeds can be at best burnt. But somehow they can still fructify. And then they became distracted. And even great yogis came to America. I don't want to name them all, but they were highly advanced meditators. But they came to the West and they weren't used to the social interaction between men and women. And even though practically, from the powers they had, they're karmic seeds were burnt, they fructified again in the association of the opposite sex. Nothing can distract their meditation, with every moment they experience the incomparable happiness of Krishna consciousness. That's for the devotees. To achieve limited versions of spiritual perfection, with dimensions of happiness that are monotonous and meager compared to pure devotional service, conditioned souls must undergo disciplines like the Eightfold Yoga System. The yadus, however, have purely spiritual bodies and therefore have no need to submit their bodies and minds to yoga discipline. They don't need to practice. They've achieved the perfectional platform. They're not struggling against their bodies. They are their bodies, and their bodies are their soul, and it's spiritual. They are eternal friends of Yogeshwar, the master of all yoga. Instead of struggling to cultivate some inward meditation in the company of Krishna, they effortlessly enjoy in various ways with all their senses. They're enjoying their senses. They're not denying their senses. Because their sensual stimulation is an experience of love. And I just give one simple classic example. If you cook something with love to please someone else and then you taste it yourself, the sensual stimulation has no selfishness in it. And therefore, it's not degrading or binding. Rather, it's nourishing the consciousness. And that's the yadus, whatever they do, whatever they experience. And then in Sanatan, he quotes in the Srimad Bhagavatam where Yudhisthira, and this is the Pandavas, so Yudhisthira tells the yadavas. So this is the Pandavas glorifying the yadavas. Let's see if this reveals some light to the question Gail asked about why are the yadus more superior than the Pandavas. So he says, the water that has washed his feet, the words he speaks in the form of the revealed scripture, and his fame is broadcast by the Vedas, these thoroughly purify this universe. Think about Krishna. Although the earth's good fortune was ravaged by time, the touch of his lotus feet has revitalized her, and thus she is raining down on us the fulfillment of our desires. So anyway, describing, now this Krishna has appeared now in Dwarka, appeared on this earth. The earth, which gets ravaged by time, and the ability of the earth to support spirituality becomes ravished, and the earth itself withdraws its resources because instead of being used for sacrifice, they're being exploited for purely materialistic reasons, and the earth withdraws its mercy. But now that it says that, now that Krishna has touched his lotus feet on the earth, then the earth is pouring and fulfilling everyone's desires. And this is actually a concept of prosperity that great saints have, that if you worship the earth and you utilize the earth for yajna or sacrifice, and you don't exploit the earth, and especially you take care of the cows, because the cows are more dear to Krishna than the Brahmins, then Krishna reciprocates with prosperity . What is prosperity? It's just how poor the world is becoming, that you can't even get fresh air, you can't even get good water anymore. The seasons become irregular. I was just like noting, actually, even I'm in Vrindavan, it's a holy place. Holy places are so wonderful. They have effect of natural opulence. Now they have so many cell phone towers. But how many trees do they have? Sometimes in Vrindavan, I go to a friend's house who lives more or less in the forest, and I get the fresh made rotis by the Brijabasis with fresh ground wheat. And I am completely desirous now, even talking about that. Haven't eaten yet. We'll eat after the class. My hunger is there, but when I see what is one Brijabasi flatbread and how nutritious it is, and then who is opulent? A person who has two rotis, a person who lives in a penthouse apartment. And then walking through the fields of Vrindavan, I have a place where I walk now. I found, where do they grow? There's 5,000 temples, and there's all these fresh flowers in Vrindavan. Where are they grown? Every day. Thousands and thousands and thousands of garlands are offered to the Supreme Lord. And I'm walking through the gardens. I know where those gardens are. And just to pick one rose and smell a fragrant rose. What opulence. And the people that live out in these beautiful fields. I knew one old man. He had a little kunj, a little cleared out area among the forest, and he kept one cow, and he had a lemon tree. So beautiful, all these lemons on the tree, and he had one amla tree and one papaya tree. He sat with his cows on his rope bed. What opulence. What opulence. And love and friendship and family and community. What opulence. The same Lord Vishnu who makes one forget the goals of heaven and liberation is now entered into marital and blood relations with you, who otherwise travel on the hellish path of family life. Indeed, in these relationships, you see and touch him directly. Walk beside him, converse with him, together with him, sit at ease. So Krishna is married in Dwarka. So it's familial relation. It comes to another stage of intimacy. Marital, blood relationships, conjugal relationships in Dwarka. Very intimate. And intimate with God means all beauty. This intimacy means revelation of heart. So the revelation of heart of that absolute reality. There's nothing more beautiful than that. And the full revelation of heart only comes in intimacy. And the more God takes a position, the less his heart is revealed. Because it's not appropriate for someone sitting so far above everyone else. In these two verses spoken during the meetings of Krishna devotees at Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira congratulates the Yadavas for the supreme fortune of their intimacy with Krishna. The water that has washed Krishna's feet in the form of the river Ganga purifies the whole universe of its sins. His instructions in the form of the Vedas educate human society to the standard of natural spiritual life free from illusion. But despite his constant presence in these two forms, in course of time the earth picks up from the creatures she supports more sinful contamination than she can bear. The whole purpose of Krishna's appearance mentioned in Krishna book. When the earth was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of demoniac kings. So sin, non-devotion, selfishness, it's a burden. If you're selfish, you're a burden to others. You're a burden to everyone if you're selfish. You're a burden to your community. You're a burden to the world. And demon means that the selfish desires are so prominent that they cannot be checked by any sense of conscience. What you want, then if you desire something, then that's what's true, is that you should have it. And it cannot be checked by any outside judgment of morality or reason. That's narcissistic. You see the world according to your desires, and those desires are so powerful, those desires are so strong, that they cannot be checked by any sense of judgment. It's a burden. To the extent that you're like that, you burden yourself. To the extent that you're like that, you burden your intimate relationships. And when people like that get in position of leadership, it's hell for everyone else. Horrible, you know, the exploitation that goes on in the name of selfishness. And when people like that come in positions of leadership, it's just absolutely hell. People are just exploited. But despite his constant presence in these two forms, what forms? The Ganga and the Vedas. In course of time, the earth picks up from the creature she supports more sinful contamination than she can bear. A glory that becomes a mere shadow of what it was. To deliver the earth from misfortune, therefore Krishna appears in the Yadu dynasty. Just by the touch of his lotus feet, she regains her former strength and can once again shower the Lord's devotees with the fulfillment of their needs and desires. The Yadus especially are so satisfied living on the earth with Krishna that they entirely forget about heaven and liberation. They prefer to stay entangled in their relations with him through marriage, siyona, and births, the pinda. The satisfaction of the heart. You only become satisfied when you have mature loving relations. And if you're lacking that, there's nowhere, no place you can be satisfied. Because that's our nature. Our nature, we're part of something else, so our identity is in relationship. Okay, I'll stop here. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hare Krishna Gail, thank you. You were here yesterday, and today again, you're listening again. I'm so appreciative, Gail, really.
I'm even more appreciative of the realization. You make the philosophy so meaningful for me. And I'm glad that you brought up this question, because I actually had very purposeful intention to ask this question again if you weren't going to bring it up, you know, about how, yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, it's escaping me. I'm not able to understand how...
Right. I'll say one more thing about that, Gail, that maybe it'll help you. It's not that all the relationships in Dwarka are better than the relationships in, I guess, with the Pandavas, where they're with Pandavas. It's in Hastinapur. But within Dwarka, there also are conjugal relationships, even though it's Swakya Ras. So there's family relationships. So even though not all, but there are relationships in Dwarka which are even more intimate. And therefore, the Yadus who have this, you know, Krishna's just married into their whole family. So and he has 16,000 wives and there's children. So there's some kind of intimacy there that even though it shades, because the Pandavas also had that kind of intimacy, but here it's indicated that it's just a little bit shade more intimate.
But when you were saying, when you were making the connection about, you know, he appeared on the earth and, the, you know, to relieve, you know, Mother Bhumi, I guess, of the burden of our selfishness. You know, you were making a connection between that and, you know, this higher level of intimacy, it seems.
Was I? Let me see if I was. I can't be. It was in the same verse. I think there were two different points that were mentioned here. And this was by Yudhisthira. He was glorifying in general. It was two things. He was in general. He was glorifying the descent of Krishna in the Yadu dynasty. And then he was saying this same Lord who has appeared in this way has entered into marital and blood relationships with you. And in these relationships, you're so close. You walk beside him. You converse with him. It's family. It's family. Pandavas are like friends. This is family. So you're eating together. You're taking your meals. You're, you know. He had great friendship with the Pandavas, and he stayed with them for some time. But they even said that.
Like,
what's that?
I mean, their relationship was more in the nature of friendships, even though they were technically like cousins, isn't it?
There was cousins, but there's a difference between cousins and being married to someone.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of more or less that's where he's living. That's his family. He left Dwarka for the war, but that's where Krishna lives. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of temporary that he was with the Pandavas. That's why they were saying, we wish these calamities happen again and again, because you're only here for that reason. You know, but you actually live in Dwarka. He returns to Dwarka. The whole war. They went to Dwarka to get Krishna, right? Duryodhana and Krishna, Duryodhana and Arjuna went. And Krishna said to them, okay, you both want me to fight in the war. I can't fight on both your sides. So one can have me and one can have my armies. And he said, okay, Arjuna, you could ask first. He said, Arjuna said, I'll take you. And Duryodhana said, oh, that's great. I can have the army. So they went to get Krishna from Dwarka, but it seems that that's where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's where his family is. And therefore they were praying that how do you... Pandavas saying, how do you think we're merciful? Krishna's not here, he's in Dwarka.
Mm-hmm.
It seems it's something to do with that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Gail. Anybody else have a question?
Oh.
What's that? Something else, Gail?
Yeah, I mean, can I really just sneak one thing in real quick?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, you know, the brahmanas are dear to Krishna because, you know, if you're a true brahmana, it's supposed to be because you know the purpose of life and you want to help others attain that. So
yeah.
How is it that, you know, the cows are more dear than them to Krishna?
Than the brahmanas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Vrindavan is called Golok because, I mean, just from a technical standpoint, there is no Brahminical culture without cows. The taking, first of all, Krishna is a cowherd. He has a special relationship with cows. And the whole Vedic society, if it's dependent on sacrifice, it's dependent on deeds. The Brahmins, just from that, they're dependent on the cow. The whole economic system is dependent on the cows. And Krishna loves the cows. He takes care of the cows. It's You have to be with cows to feel it. When I'm in Vrindavan and I go to Pranky Shore's farm and you see those cows, there's something very, very special, and they give milk. It's a whole sustenance. Even in Govardhan Hill, why is Govardhan Hill so dear? Because it gives grasses to the cows. And therefore, Krishna's whole livelihood is dependent on the cows. He's also a Vaishya community. The Vaishyas depend on the cows. So although Krishna is God, he's a Vaishya, he's a cowherd boy. The cowherd boys take care of the cows, and they understand that the whole sustenance society is based on the cows. The cows are more dear than even the Brahmins. That's Krishna's personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anybody else like to ask a question? Thank you, Gail. Anybody like to say hello today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Bol, is that Nanda Dulal?
Yes, Maharaj.
Wow, so nice to have you there hearing the class. I know how much you relish hearing Krishna Katha. Thank you.
Maharaj, you have time today and any time to give me, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, I can. You can just send me, I can call you in about a half hour.
Okay.
Can you send me your new phone number? Can you email it to me now?
Okay.
I'll call you in a half hour. Sure.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Bol, please accept my humble obeisances.
Amiya, that's you?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you so much for this explanation of the difference between Dwarka
I'll call you later today to finalize whether I come over tomorrow or not. Okay?
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bol, Maharaj. Welcome back to USA.
Mother Indrani, so
yes,
nice.
Accept my obeisances. It's all glorious.
Oh, great. Very nice. I know how much you also just like to hear about Krishna.
That's for sure. Can't wait to get here at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that gives me great inspiration that you're enjoying the classes. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bol, Maharaj. Donava.
Hey, Donovan, I was just thinking of you today. I'll probably also give you a call later today if you're in, okay?
Okay.
We're still thinking, like, maybe I can come down there sometime. Great.
Thank
you. We had a nice lunch here. A lot of people came yesterday. Nice. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? All
right, Bob. All right.
Shastra, is that you?
Yes.
Great. Thanks, Shastra. Very nice. And someone else was there? I heard another voice. Who's that?
Henry,
okay. Practically everyone that calls, I owe a phone call sometime. just eventually I'll see everyone. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Someone made a great attempt to say hello. Okay. Thank you all. Thank you.